So welcome to the afternoon session. We're going to have two talks, followed by coffee, followed by two talks. And our first speaker for the afternoon session is Haoran Yu. He's going to talk about Tianyu simulating the neutrino set.
Good afternoon. Today I'm going to talk about a big simulation, the Tianyu neutrino large-scale structure simulation. My collaborators are here. Tianyu is a big cosmological large-scale simulation with cold dark matter and massive neutrinos running on the world's fastest Tianhe 2, TH2 supercomputer. It is aimed to measure the neutrino mass in a cosmological way with future cosmological data by studying the non-Gaussian dynamics of the neutrino cold dark matter co-evolution. This is when we were working on TH2 for several of years until we ran that simulation. So in particle physics and cosmology, the standard model suggests a zero mass neutrino, and which is actually not the case. In the flavor oscillation observation and the experiment, the massless neutrino has been convincingly disproved by those observations and oscillations. However, the flavor oscillation experiments can tell only the mass square difference of the three kinds of neutrinos. And we still want to know the absolute mass of the neutrino. So cosmological method is one of the most promising non-oscillation method to measure the absolute mass of the neutrinos. By far, the Planck data and large-scale structure constraint gives about 0.2 eV. The neutrino mass should be less than 0.2 eV at 95% confidence level. And we have new developed large-scale structure analysis and methods for constraining the neutrino mass. For example, the neutrino mass can affect on the large-scale structure, and it has a little percent level suppression of the matter power spectrum, and it can be observed by weak lensing surveys. And neutrinos also has effects on the halo mass, depending on the neutrino and cold dark matter density contrast. Derek is going to talk about that later. And the neutrino and cold dark matter has a relative velocity. The neutrino decouples early from the universe at about 1 MeV, and they were relativistic. And until now, neutrinos has the relative velocity respective to dark matter, and it has spark velocity and thermal velocity. And this effect can cause the wake effect, which is the neutrinos flow over dense cold dark matter halos, and it turns into wakes and over densities. And it can be observed by firstly, the estimation of neutrino and dark matter densities and relative velocities, and we can stack the density to see if there is wakes, and the observables are the dipole cross correlation. Homing is about to talk about that tomorrow. So those are all nonlinear effects. So we have to simulate it in embodied simulations. And usually there are grid-based and particle-based simulations for cosmological neutrinos. And we use particle-based because it is able to resolve the non-Gaussian small structure coevolution of neutrino and dark matters. Secondly, we need large enough physical volume for the statistics for the halos and the density velocity reconstruction. And most importantly, we need a great number of neutrino embodied particles to reduce the Poisson noise. Previous simulations, particle-based neutrino simulations, they have less neutrino mass. They can only deal with really large neutrino masses because for larger neutrino masses, they have more density fluctuations, and thus the fluctuations will overwhelm the Poisson noise. For more realistic lower neutrino mass simulation, neutrino fluctuations are even lower, and we require a very low Poisson noise to see the fluctuation signal on neutrinos. So we really need to run a big simulation. And to run that big simulation, we need big computers like TH2, and we need to deal with a lot of technical problems like memory and storage. So we figured the cosmological simulation called QP3M on the TH2 supercomputer January this year, and we successfully ran a simulation. It was on nearly 14,000 nodes on 300,000 CPU cores. The gray cell is this number of on two-level grid, and we have nearly 7,000 cube cold dark matter particles and 14,000 cube neutrino particles. They have the particle mass is about 7 times 10 to the 8 and 3 times 10 to the 5 solar masses. The total particle number is about 3 times 10 to the 12, 3 trillion particles. We set the neutrino mass to be 0.05 eV. We ran two simulations with the same initial conditions, same seed. The one with neutrinos, we call TNU, and the other cold dark matter only simulation, we call it TN cold. The box size is 1.2 gigaparsec per H. The fourth calculation for the code is on a two-level mesh. The cores, we have the coarse force, fine force, and the particle-particle force. The global coarse force is computed on a coarse grid. It has the global communication using on the on 7,000 cube coarse force. It is done by solving the gravitational Poisson equation on this grid. And this requires the global communication by MPI. We use 14,000 computing nodes dealing with each of the pencil beams to do the coarse grid FFT. And this one dominates the calculation time. And the fine force is defined to be zero on large scales. So we loop the fine force calculation on sub-node volume. On each computing node, we loop over the tiles to do also solving the Poisson Poisson equation on a 240 cubed grid. It has 216 tiles per node. And the nearest force is just the particle-particle pairwise force. If the two particles are located in one fine grid, the force between them are calculated by PP force. And we choose the softening length to be 13 kpc per h. And we also test other softening lengths. And we find that 13 kpc per h gives accurate enough power spectrum in the result. So the for the initial conditions, we start off the cold dark matter at redshift 100 and let it evolve to redshift 5. And then we choose to add in neutrinos because neutrinos are relatively moving very fast relativistically at a high redshift. If we put neutrino in by redshift 100, they dominate the computing time. Neutrinos between redshift 100 and redshift 5, they are linearly distributed. So we add them in at redshift 5 is okay. Also we have TN new and TN cold two set of simulations to compare. And neutrinos have initial velocity. They have the linear component, which is large scale. We get them by the density fluctuation, and it has the thermal velocity. And next, I will show a movie. This is a slice, and the box size is 1.2 gigaparsec. It starts from redshift 5 when we add in neutrinos. On this part is dark matter, and on that side is neutrinos, and we zoom in this small part. The neutrino mass is 0.05 eV, and we can see that on larger scales, they have the same structure as cold dark matter. Again, the simulation took about 48 hours computing time on TH2, but we actually use more than 2 weeks. A group of people in Toronto and in Guangzhou, where the simulation is computing. we are shifting 24 hours per day over a total of 2 weeks doing this because we have lots of bugs. For example, we have tens of times of system I/O bugs, memory bus errors, and the cooling system problems. The TH2 administrators they wanted to save power and shut down half of the cooling system, and usually the computer just went down. And I remember the longest time we ran this simulation without any error for about 10 hours. That was because Guangzhou was raining and the temperature was really, really low. And during the daytime in Toronto, Guangzhou is at nighttime, so the temperature is really cool, so we can run for several hours. Usually we just ran for every 1 or 2 hours, then we got some bugs and some errors. Then we have to restart from the nearest checkpoint and start off again. And some other technical problems include the MPI communication. We really have lots of data to communicate between computation nodes, and some MPI subroutine doesn't work if we trying to transfer over 2 gigabytes of data, so we have to rewrite the MPI out to our subroutine into send receive pairwise calls, and the checkpoint also took a lot of time. Usually half an hour to 1 hour for a single checkpoint. Then during which time the we cannot run any simulation, just saving data. And we later on try the shared memory method, write the data into shared memory and keep going the simulation, and by the same time copying the data from shared memory to the hard disks. Okay, so this is another plot for the TNU simulation, and the left that small corner is zoomed out.
And what Tian was, I guess I missed it, but this machine. Tian is the name of the machine?
Tianhe 2 is the machine of the supercomputer, and we name our simulation to be Tianyu. And Tian code is the code dark matter only counterpart of it. Again, the
sky.
Tian means sky.
Okay.
Sky.
Tian is.
And Tianhe in China means galaxy, Milky Way galaxy.
Tianhe is
galaxy. Tianhe is the river on the sky.
The river on the sky.
It means Milky Way.
Tian itself is just
Tian
the sky.
Is just the sky.
Okay.
Right. And also we have the storage issue.
Can you explain at the last slide what the colors mean?
In this projection, the orange cloud-like color means the neutrinos, and those blue-like color means the cold dark matter, and we can easily see that they trace each other. But neutrinos doesn't have the smallest cluster structure.
So the graininess that we see is the shock of it. Is that the kind of graininess in the
this one?
Yeah.
Yes, but we actually have a much lower shock noise because this is getting from the coarse grid data, and we have a much finer grid data. So we were able to make a much high resolution plot.
Okay. Is there a plot of power spectrum?
Yeah, later I have one. So I was saying the memory issue and the storage issue, and if you calculate 3 trillion particle simulation, and if you we calculate in the simulation, we use the primary memory usage is the 24 bytes per particle, 3 velocity, 3 position, 4 byte per coordinate. That's a lot. And if we save all the particles in the hard disk, it's going to be 24 bytes times 3 trillion. That's a lot. But we use 1 byte per coordinate and 2 per velocity component. That means we use 9 bytes per particle in storage. It's still 27 terabytes per redshift and per snapshot. And we have total of 1 petabyte of data for tens of redshift snapshots. And that's the history of our simulation. We start off from redshift 100. That's the scale factor from 1/100. We add neutrinos by redshift 5. So the memory goes up, and we use more than 22 hours. And this figure shows we use about 2,500 time steps for the whole simulation. And it takes about 100 seconds per time step. And the spikes means either a system error or just the checkpoint time. Checkpoint time usually take 1 hour. So this is about 1 hour for a snapshot. And I think if the green line is low, maybe here is running and the Guangzhou was running. And I think for this part, the computer is super hot.
Is it just CDN or
this is just CDN.
So the neutrinos can't affect CDN until they're actually added in.
Yeah, we generate neutrino. We generate initial conditions for cold dark matter at 100 and the neutrinos at 5.
You calculate the combined path of function that is 5. Linearly evolved randomly to redshift 100 and 1/4. That's that you get what you hope you would get. Could be if you had both.
Linear theory. Oh, wait, so then do you then split the CDN into CDN plus neutrinos then? I mean, because you're using the joint transfer function at redshift 5 and going back and then going forward?
Yeah, I don't know what you do with it.
Wow, okay. So when you guys add in the neutrinos, how do you guys generate the velocities?
Yeah, from linear velocity and thermal velocity.
Uniform isotropic from the graph, is that what you do?
That's linear perturbation.
In the density or also in the momenta?
So we have the Fermi Dirac component and the linear.
With the uniform temperature or spatially varying temperature, is it isotropic?
Uniform Fermi Dirac.
The bulk motion.
Bulk motion is linear.
Okay, so you're not doing the perturbations in the distribution function.
Sorry?
So you're not including the perturbations in the distribution function when you initialize the neutrinos.
Yes.
Not beyond the Dovich. I mean, the Dovich makes sense to go up and down.
Yeah, but I mean the perturbations to the neutrino momentum distribution.
Only in the mean shift.
Yeah, it's the bulk velocity. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's very small, but it's normal, at least it's 5, the thermal velocity is at least in order of magnitude, not more, higher than the typical bulk. I mean, the corrections to that are still, at least 5 are still small. And if we know density, all the fairly linear still at least 5, you know, the RMS balance, the percent, I think.
Yes, what are the velocities, I guess, that, you know, for the neutrinos at this redshift? You know, so how much are they moving in terms of your, like, grid cells?
The thermal is 1,000, it's like 3,000 today, so it's like 15,000 kilometers per second is thermal.
And the bulk motion is again maybe a few hundredths of the order.
Yeah. Yeah. So the question is, how much are they streaming? During this time.
So the flume is huge in this megaparsecs, presumably, right? The free streaming length of the big neutrino, especially 5, was long, which
okay,
is why
yeah.
It's linear, right? You say, oh, I keep the distribution unchanged.
Right,
linear.
Right. Okay, yeah. So then I guess it would be useful just to see the power spectrum. Yeah.
I think the real concept, this shifted Fermi Dirac thing, sounds very artificial and, in fact, non analytic, because if you just shift the Fermi Dirac to have absolute value of momentum in it.
You take some Fermi Dirac and then you add a mean velocity, right? So it's a Fermi Dirac centered on some other momentum.
Right, so I'm saying the Fermi Dirac is going to be changed at the same level as, there will be a perturbation of the Fermi Dirac at the same, at the linear order.
Of course.
Right, so that, and you're ignoring.
That's ignored. So the adiabatic compression, for example, there's a quark. It's not that simple because in principle there's an adiabatic compression which of course the temperature is probably down locally by a small amount.
So that's the.
I'm a little bit confused here. It's a trivial question. You asked this. You have a bunch of cold dark matter particles, right?
Right.
That have some masses of 10 to the 8 or so solar masses, right? And then you have neutrinos.
Okay.
What? They're particles?
Yeah, they're all particles, and we use.
What kind of masses do these things? I just don't understand how. What are the neutrinos in these simulations?
What are the neutrinos?
They're particles, right?
Yeah, they're particles.
What are the masses of the neutrino particles?
I think it's the same question.
Yes, we showed it earlier on.
Question that you asked Neil earlier.
I'm still confused about this. I don't understand how you put neutrinos to build cluster, which do not become particles. How do you, why?
Yeah, so the reason why they don't cluster is that they have a high velocity, right?
And they don't, right.
I think the reason, okay, so this confused a lot of people and confused me for a long time. I think the easy way to understand it is the following, right? So ideally, you would like to just model the full phase space, okay? So you have your six-dimensional grid, and you have 10 to the 100, whatever particles, right? And then you say, okay, it's because I cannot simulate 10 to the 100 particles, I'm just going to randomly pick 10 to the 10, which I can simulate, right? And then multiply what I get with some large number to correct for the fact that I didn't pick all of them, but randomly pick some number, right? So you shouldn't associate kind of this mass of the particles being a physical mass, right? They're just sampling the full six-dimensional space using like a small fraction of particles, hoping the physics is the right thing, and then renormalizing to the full thing, right? So it doesn't mean I have like a bunch of like my microscopic number of neutrinos moving in unison, right? I think it's confusing way to look at it. Right? Does this make sense?
But that's where the shot noise comes from. It started on
top.
Yeah, so if you have a shot noise, is that you're not fully sampling the distribution function.
Maybe if it goes to this part, it'll be more clear.
Yeah, so those are the power spectrum, the dimensionless power spectrum. Black is the cold dark matter. Red is neutrino, and their cross power, and dotted shows the linear, nonlinear, and this linear prediction for neutrinos multiplied by the same ratio of linear nonlinear from the Kodak matter.
So why do you have two red dotted lines?
And this is, I suppose. There, this is for this is the pure linear neutrino prediction, and multiplied by the same ratio of these two, right? But yeah.
And so the solid red versus the dashed red, what are those?
And this is the Poisson noise.
Okay, so the solid red is what?
Is neutrino, the measured neutrino power subtract. In the Poisson noise.
So the red dashed line is the measured neutrino power.
The red dashed, yes.
But you're not getting the regime where the neutrino power of course is dominated by the gravity of dark matter, which
of
is
course,
the much, much larger.
Course,
so,
yeah, what, yeah.
So you
yeah.
see the clustering because it doesn't come of itself, it would be hopeless if you went to.
Right,
the
error you're making though in the action between the clustering is like order unity at k of 1.
No,
so.
It's 10 to minus 3 because it's the fraction that you get the black plus red one.
No. The error in neutrino clustering is order unity at k of around 1 or so.
The error, okay, you bet the two types of errors. So the error of the neutrinos on the dark matter is of order 1 at k of 1, yes.
No, sorry. Just the difference between dashed red and solid red. I'm
yes.
saying that difference is order unity at k of around 1.
Indeed, but if you subtract
okay.
the short noise, you still get the correct clustering of things.
Yeah, but the short noise
but
is just.
Correct, I mean, who knows?
This is a standard short noise, so you just have to subtract it from any discrete distribution.
So the CDM dashed short noise is small compared to the actual clustering.
Because there are many more particles there.
No, it's because there are more clusters.
Oh, right, sorry. That's
more
right.
Cluster.
There's much more clustering there.
Right.
No,
so
I think it depends on the question you ask, right? So if we ask a question like what Yassine has been studying extensively, even if my neutrinos had zero true mass, such that they contributed nothing gravitationally at all, they would still have plus almost because we've got to find that sampling of the phase space. But I can still ask, if they're moving in the background of CDM, what is their clustering? And I can still answer the question, even though I may not have sampled the space very high, because it doesn't matter. I just want to know what the reaction of black is on red. Right? That's what Yassine has studied as well. And that is a well-defined question for which you can be completely swamped by short noise and still get the right answer, because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how finely I sample it. I just need to know whether I got the reaction from black to red right. I'm not going to obviously agree that the reaction from red to black is off by order unity to k of 1.
The effect of the red on the black.
Yes, it's all by order unity. It's a fraction, because it's a tiny fraction of clustering. But
right, but the entire purpose of the simulation is to compute that effect.
Like I said, the two types of effects, right? There's the effect of if you wanted to have a black line with neutrinos and black line without neutrinos, and subtract those two.
Right.
Those I wouldn't talk about the k of one. That I agree.
Okay. Good. So,
however, I think an unknown question which Yassine has studied in detail, which is, what is a solid red compared to the dotted red? Okay, that's an unknown question, which is also numerically and analytically poorly understood, except for techniques like this, and perhaps the techniques like you have, which is, and that's unknown, and that's actually answerable by this, which wasn't knowable before. So there is something new that the red contains, that even though you have short noise, is actually answered quantitatively.
And what are the two dotted reds again? I forgot.
So this is the linear, completely linear prediction for neutrinos at redshift zero, and that is multiplied by the ratio of nonlinear cold dark matter and linear cold dark matter.
A bit more words than Yassine's mouth here. what Yassine has brilliantly shown is that this is beyond any reasonable explanation because. The red you will notice is completely linear, right? Delta is at k of 1, is 10 minus 4. That's how much more linear do you want the theory to be? And you would think, I can just do linear perturbation theory in a nonlinear driving force. Surely this is, good to, neutrinos are completely linear. 10 minus 4 is, what more do you want? I expect the error I have, 10 minus, 4 of that is what I would naively thought how well I can predict. A neutrino by just using a nonlinear black driving term instead of a linear black driving term. That's what people I thought you've seen and Simeon seen had demonstrated very nicely. And yet the red line is actually above that dotted line, which cannot be explained in any linear context. So which means that if you're at about 1, I believe it even at 0.5, right, you can see the red is above the dotted. So the red deviates from the dotted, non-linearly corrected dotted red, and then of course there's the unequal time effect, which makes the discrepancy even worse. So there are a number of physical effects in here that are clearly not numerical, and of course Yassine and Simeon have done a number of simulations as a function of neutrino mass and other parameters. So what I'm saying is there are different questions that one can ask and can answer.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we wait for Yassine to tell us about that?
Let's
let
Tara.
Yes,
they're
going to
tell us about that.
No, but we can talk about it.
And we're going to do the analysis on the power spectrum affected by neutrinos and the halo mass function, relative velocity, dipole weak signal, and my colleagues will talk about that later. So to conclude, I showed you guys the TNU simulation, and it's about to do the cosmological analysis to determine the neutrino mass. And also, this is a 3 × 10^12 number of particle n-body simulation. And this is still, if you think this is still not big enough, we can figure. So the biggest problem is maybe the memory issue, and we can use 1 byte per coordinate for the simulation in the calculation. So that may give us 10 times less memory consumption, and we can run a 30 trillion particle simulation on the same machine. And we, for the speed, we can optimize the particle mesh calculation algorithm on the so-called many integrated core architecture on those the greatest computers. That's it.
Okay, we probably have time for one question. Does anyone have any other comments or questions?
I have a question. What's the cross correlation? So you showed the cross power of neutrinos in CDM.
Yep.
Do you have like this cross power divided by square root of P CDM Q? Like what is the cross correlation coefficient of neutrinos?
I think Derek is showing that immediately. Right?
I'm not.
Okay, so
if I take green divided by square root of black times square root of red, is it close to one or is it
on large scale is close to one. And on small scales is 0.5, 0.6. Yeah. I can remember.
It's easy enough to do, yeah, exactly. But I don't think we have that plot sitting nearby.
Big behind.
Do not, exactly.
But it's bigger than 0.1. It's between 0.1 and 1, even at a k of 1, I would say.
It cannot be more than 1, that's for sure.
It cannot be more than 1. It cannot be more than 0.1 for the whole thing.
Okay, why don't we thank Kamran again, and we'll move on.